And some girls could hardly open their eyes. Their eyes were so swollen with this. They were trying to figure out what it was that was causing it. They didn't know if it was the rosin or the powder that was used in the rubberized material or if it was the adhesive or what it was. But anyway, there quite a few of the workers were bothered with this condition.
And when you went to the doctor, you had to pay your own doctor,
oh,
right?
Yes, yes. He would prescribe something for the irritation, like Argerol. And
this still bothers you today at times.
Yes, it does. It would. Our eyes were so irritated that when I would get up in the morning, I couldn't open my eyes right away to a bright light. I wanted everything, the lights had to be dim. Mm. It didn't seem to bother me. I haven't heard of anybody having any eyesight trouble because of it.
It must have caused some damage.
But it was some irritation, yes.
Well then, was it during this period of time that in the evening you took a course at the Albion High School for machine shop?
Yes. There was an adult education course given at the high school for machine shop, and some other girls and I decided that it was an interesting thing to get into. Mm-hmm. We had no idea what it was about, but anyway, they gave us a course in learning to operate a hand lathe, a small lathe, the milling machine, the punch press.
Well, from all of this, you were able to get a job.
Yes. Steve Penisak had a machine shop down on Beaver Alley in Albion, and he hired quite a few men there, and he hired us girls to work at the machine shop. And it was really interesting work. Of course, the men would set up the machines for us, get them all set up, and all we had to do was sit there and move the little wheels now and then, and they told us just exactly what to do. And one of the other jobs there was filing these castings that were brought in, and we sat around this long table and with our files and filed the rough edges off of these castings. No protection. I believe we wore some sort of overalls or something like that when we worked there. We didn't.
You didn't worry about breathing in the shavings.
Never thought of such a thing. No.
Well, also at this time, of course, it was wartime, and I think you said you were a volunteer at least twice a week. Spotting airplanes. And
yes,
this was up
we
at
were.
Leonard Park.
We were airplane observers, and then we do go by twos. And our job was to stay for a certain period of time at the airplane spotting booth, and we would call in a Greenfield number. I think it out of Buffalo, I think it was. We had this number. We would call and tell them that we were reporting for duty. And then any planes that went overhead, we were to tell them the shape of the plane, which direction they were flying in, and from what direction.
Things have changed today. They can do this
in the elevation. Yes. We did have a little briefing in how to do this. Yes.
Marge, do you remember the end of the war at all? Was there any kind of celebration in Albion? Of course, we had the first part of the war, you know, in May, when the Germans surrendered, and then, of course, later the Japanese. But was there any kind of celebration that you can remember?
I don't recall any celebrations, but I'm sure there must have been parades and plenty of celebration.
I neglected to ask you about your husband's work. I think you said that Ed worked in the Albion cold storage. for a while.
Yes, he did. He worked in the Albion Coal Storage when I first met him, and for a few years afterward. And then he went to work on construction in the city. It paid much.
Paid a lot more, right?
Yes.
And you say the city, you mean in Rochester?
In Rochester, yes.
And
mostly.
You said he worked there for about 27 years.
Yes.
Well, he's a big fellow. He could handle it. Now, in 49, you adopted your son, and you didn't work for a while, except on a part-time basis, is that right?
That's right.
And then you chose to work in the Arnold Gregory Hospital, and...
Yes, I worked there as nurse's aide for approximately a year, and then I worked in Pagel's Nursing Home and Houston's Nursing Home.
Now, I think that you're one of the Lipton ladies, so you must have gone in to work at the Lipton plant in Albion for a long time.
Yes, I applied for a job at Lipton's, and they asked me to come to work that afternoon if I had a white uniform, which I happened to have. So I went to work at Lipton's, and I worked there for 20 years. 5 years out in production, and the rest of the time I worked in the quality control department at Lipton's.
The interview that you did with Mr. Burroughs describes a lot of the Lipton work.
Yes. Of course, he wasn't in quality control, and I was, and I worked in statistics for a while for David Johnson. And that was very interesting. And then I went into the bacteria department, and I worked, we checked all the raw material for staph and E. coli.
Now staph, you mean staph infection?
Staph infection and E. coli in the different products. We checked everything. And that was the process for each product. It took about a week before we had the results. And the material wasn't allowed to circulate to be used in the production until we okayed each of the raw materials.
Well, Marge, you worked at Lipton's, and I believe, until they closed, or almost until?
No, I was having trouble with my hands. In fact, I had to have an operation on my hands. So I decided to take an early retirement, and I didn't quite make it to the closing of Lipton's.
Almost. You do belong
within
to,
a couple years.
You belong to a group called the Lipton Ladies, and you get together once
in
a while?
Oh, yes, Lipton Lady Retirees, and we meet at the Albion Fire Hall once a month, and we all bring a buffet, or we all bring a dish to pass, and we play bingo and have a business meeting, and that's been going on for quite a few years.
About how many ladies belong to that?
Well, at first there were so few that they even used to let people that never worked at Lipton's come
at
this time. There's about 60 women enrolled in Lipton Lady Retirees.
Is there any kind of a, did Lipton's have any kind of a pension or retirement benefit?
Oh, yes, yes. They had, well, some people felt as though it wasn't adequate to meet their retirement needs if they didn't have any other source of income. But it was. It was something. And those that worked until the plant shut down received a very good severance pay, which was very good for those who had worked there quite a few years.
Marge, I believe that you've told me that knowing you were going to be adopting the little baby, you joined the United Methodist Church in Albion. in 1948, and you have belonged there for approximately 33 years. And it's still, you're very active in the church.
Yes.
Yes. I know that you're very active in the Orleans County Historical Association, and you have done a number of very good interviews through people that you know and some that whom you don't know too well or haven't known too well. But you have done interviews for this oral history project, and I certainly appreciate it, and I know a lot of other people do or will eventually. I believe that in 1978 you joined the DAR, which is headquartered in Albion, and I believe to join DAR, am I right, you have to know your background pretty well?
Yes, yes.
And I think you have a very fascinating background, as well as a present life, but your background, I think, besides your father, of course I knew your father as a salesman.
Yes.
I think your background centers on the Sweat family. And I think your Uncle Marshall Loke, whom you interviewed, played a big part in your life. How does the DAR help you? How does it encourage you to look into your past?
Well, in order to join the DAR, in the first place, you have to have a patriot soldier who fought in the American Revolution. And fortunately for me, my great aunt Emily Sweat, who was a doctor in Medina, had joined the DAR back quite a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And not only did she join through the Sweat heritage, but she also looked up her supplementals, which are to say that other revolutionary soldiers who were descended from her family, you could trace back your heritage and find out quite a bit about different ancestors.
Mm-hmm. So this really lays the groundwork for the interview that you and I are going to do at another time concerning the Sweat background, because the Sweat family name played such a predominant role in this whole area. It's fantastic.
Yes, it did.
Yes. Well, Marge, thank you so much for this interview. I certainly appreciate your spending the time, the willingness to spend the time and share it with us.
It was my pleasure.
For the Orleans County Historical Association, November 6, 1981, Helen McAllister of Medina, New York, is interviewing Mrs. Marjorie Cook Radzinski of 574 Moore Street in Albion, New York. Well, you've done a number of interviews for the Oral History Project, and since you have done this, you know how we do it, and you have so many wonderful memories of your background. Your genealogy includes the Sweat family, especially of the Medina area. But the influence was so far-reaching. I wish that you would remember back, beginning now, when were your earliest remembrances of any of the Sweats or any stories?
Well, I believe it would go back to my grandmother. I used to go and visit there as a child.
What grandmother was this?
Grandmother, that was my mother's mother, who was Cora Estelle Loke.
Mm-hmm.
She lived with her sister, Dr. Emily Sweat, on West Avenue.
In Medina?
In Medina. Great Uncle Albert, or their brother, gave them the life use of this home on West Avenue, which was two houses south of Chestnut Street,
mm-hmm.
in Medina.
Mm-hmm.
When I used
I used to go and visit my grandmother, and my great aunt Emily always was in the background. She was retired from her medical profession. Mm-hmm. I remember that her study was on the second floor, and as you walked in the house, you could smell the medicine smell. Mm-hmm. And I used to steer a little clear of her for that reason. I was frightened.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Mark, who?
I was about 9 years old when I used to go and, that I recall going to visit my grandma and my great aunt Emily. One thing I do remember about Aunt Emily is the fact that she did beautiful needlework. I saw one of the bedspreads that she had on her guest room bed, and it was beautifully all hand needlework on it. There were flowers in the center of the spread, and it was a beautiful quilt. Mm. And at the time, I was visiting my great Aunt Emily as well as my grandma. Aunt Emily showed me this quilt that she was working on, which was a map of the United States. And in each state, she managed to embroider a flower of that state. Mm-hmm. And not only did she embroider the flower, but she sent for, she used a flower as a pattern and duplicated the colors as exactly as she could. Mm-hmm. She mentioned that at the time. Anyway, this quilt was entered in a national contest, and she won second prize in the national contest.
Oh,
I believe this quilt is in the possession of some of her nieces in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. and it is well preserved at this time. Mm-hmm. Another thing that Great Aunt Emily excelled in, and that was in writing poetry. She wrote some excellent poetry. Mm-hmm. And she also delved in the family genealogy. She was very interested, and she mm-hmm. went out of her way to find out as much as she could mm-hmm. about the family.
That's very meaningful to you now, isn't it?
Yes. It certainly is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, my grandmother lived there, and she darned all of the cook children's socks. She had the honor of, mm-hmm. and she taught me how
very
to darn.
Important. And now we don't do it at all.
Yes. Yes. By the way, they also had a housekeeper that lived with them and could clean the house and did the mm-hmm. most of the cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Although I remember my grandmother making some very good molasses cookies.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything at all about the housekeeper that they had? Was she a local woman?
Yes, she was a local woman, and mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember who she is. Mm-hmm. The person that would probably know would be the McElwees. Is
yes.
that the name that lived next door? I'm sure that they had one son, and I'm sure that he is in Medina now. I can't think mm-hmm. of his name.
Was it the common practice to have someone live in as a housekeeper at that time, or was this only for people who were more affluent?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I know we never had a housekeeper.
Just you.
Uh-huh.
Right, yes. Okay. You said that your Aunt Emily, Dr. Emily Sweat, was retired at your earliest remembrance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Could you, from family remembrances handed down to you, what kind of doctor was Dr. Emily Sweat? Was she a surgeon? Did she help in the birthing of babies? Was it just women she attended? What kind of medicine, and how does she transport herself, etc.?
Well, Aunt Emily used to be our family doctor. I mean, that was the only doctor we knew, and I think it was only, she just went from house to house, or and with her pills and like that.
Mm-hmm. Probably carried a little black satchel.
She was our family doctor for delivery of babies, but she was a member of the Western New York, I don't know how to pronounce that, HOMOEOPATHY.
Yes. She was widely respected. Did she practice medicine in any place other than Medina that you recall?
It was mostly in Medina. Mm-hmm. By the way, she was very active in the Baptist Church in Medina also, and was quite instrumental in directing the choir that they used for Old Home Week in Medina.
I've heard several people speak about that, that she was the director of that.
And that was in 1906.
Yes. And I had thought that was held every so often, but they had it just the once. And then I guess people sort of got tired and didn't do it again.
In her later years, Dr. Sweat went to Boston to help her brother, who was a minister, Lyman R. Sweat. She helped him in his bi-pocket church envelope business. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I remember those church envelopes were divided in half, one half for missions and one half for the home.
That's right.
Service. And they were instrumental in getting those out, eh?
Yes. And then she did come back to Medina during the influenza epidemic and worked with the doctors in her hometown during the flu epidemic.
Mm-hmm. She was a large woman, wasn't she?
Yes, she was. Yes, she was quite tall and
solid.
Heavy.
Yes.
Heavy set.
Yes. Now she never married, right?
She never married, no.
Mm-hmm. Took her whole time.
Mm-hmm. She also compiled quite a bit of history of the Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. She researched on that, and my mother's brother-in-law built a replica of the original Baptist Church in Medina. It was authentic in the fact that my grandmother remembered how the pews were laid out and the structure of the church. It was a white, little white church with a steeple, and it had the little gas jets at the side, and you lifted the top off the church and you could see the way, the layout of the church. Mm. And that is preserved at the Baptist Church in Medina to this day.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My grandmother's son, Marshall Loke, lived at the homestead with his Aunt Emily and his mother. He was not married yet, and he had a bedroom in the back part of the house. He was a very quiet person, and but when they were eating at the table, they were very proper, and about in the middle of the meal, he would maybe find a little bug in a salad or something like that. He'd out or a hair, and he'd bring it out, and then everybody was so shocked. But he also showed me a musical instrument that he had, I believe perhaps as a result of his World War I days. It was a fife. Hmm. He had a fife that he had in his room. And I would also see this steel helmet that he had, mm-hmm. up in the attic, that was. Mm-hmm. And also he had a rifle with a bayonet on the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Did he see action in World War I?
Yes, he did. Yes, he was in World War I, and he was in the medical
division.
Mm-hmm. And that's just about all I can recall, mm-hmm. that. Louis.
Marge, would you tell us what you remember about your great-uncle, Albert Louis Sweat?
Yes, I'd be glad to. I went to live with Jeanette Tanner when I was 9 years old. My aunt, who I had formerly lived with, was ill. So Jeanette asked me to come and live with her. It was just prior to my 10th birthday that she took me with her to visit her uncle Albert Sweat and my great uncle. I recall us walking into his home on West Center Street, and he was in a bed downstairs in the living room. He had been injured in an automobile accident and was confined to his bed. And I remember Aunt Jeanette taking me in to see him, and him. And that was the first time I recall, mm-hmm. seeing him.
Mm-hmm. His wife was also in the auto accident, wasn't she?
Yes, she was. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know her very well. Mm-hmm. But Jeanette was very close to Albert and Lucinda Sweat, because she was orphaned at a very early age, and they took her in and brought her up as their own daughter. Very small. Mm-hmm. So she was close to them.
Mm-hmm. Marge, because Dr. Emily Sweat kept such a beautiful little booklet on the genealogy, she has written in ink in this book of the deaths of your Uncle Albert and his wife and the funerals. Would you read that for us, please?
Helen, could I go back?
Sure.
To one more funeral service,
mm-hmm.
which would tie everything in together. And this referred to Joel Sweat,
mm-hmm.
also. The funeral services of Joel Bates Sweat were held in Medina, New York, at the home of his daughter, Jeanette S. Tanner, South Academy Street, December 1916. Mm-hmm. Burial at Batesville Cemetery, Reverend M. E. Van Nostrand, mm-hmm. minister.
Mm-hmm.
That was an older brother of Albert Louis Sweat.
Mm-hmm.
The funeral services of Albert Louis Sweat were held at the family residence, 416 West Center Street, Medina, New York, on April 15th, 1924. Mm-hmm. Reverend M. E. Van Nostrand of Albany officiated. Burial at Boxwood Cemetery. The funeral services of Lucinda M. Sweat We're held at 416 West Center Street, Medina, New York, on January 15, 1926. Reverend M.E. Van Ostrand officiating. Burial at Boxwood Cemetery.
Marge, what can you tell us about the parents of A.L. Sweat?
Albert Sweat's father's name was Joel Richard Sweat. He was born in Massachusetts. Conway, there's a discrepancy whether it's Conway, Massachusetts or Northfield, Massachusetts. But nevertheless, he came with his father, Dr. Jonathan Sweat, by packet boat from Massachusetts when he was very young. They came by way of the Ridge Road and lived in Weedsport for a couple years, and then proceeded on this packet boat. They owned two packet boats, his father did. Mm-hmm. And he carried on by packet boat to Rochester. In Rochester, he built a home, and they lived there a short time. And then, either by selling the house in Rochester, or by selling his packet boats, or both, they proceeded on the Ridge Road until they came to a place near Brockport, New York. Mm-hmm. And on to Ridgeway, New York. They settled in Ridgeway, and that is where Albert Sweat's father met his mother. Her name was Minerva Bates, and she was one of Medina's oldest residents.
Marge, I noticed that you are fortunate enough to have the obituary write-ups of the parents of Albert Sweat. Would you read them for us?
Joel Richard Sweat was born in Northfield, Massachusetts, January 19, 1808. His early boyhood was spent in New England until he was 14 years of age, when his father, Dr. Jonathan Sweat, moved with his family to New York State as one of the pioneers of Orleans County. He was married October 2, 1836, to Minerva Frances Bates, who has shared the experiences of his life, his joys and sorrows, until the time of his death. In 1856, he moved to Illinois, and while a resident there, responded to his country's call and entered the Federal Army in the War of the Rebellion. He served in the Army 13 months, the last month as a prisoner in Libby Prison. Exchanged and discharged for disability, he returned to his family and in 1866 again came to Medina, where he has remained a resident until his decease. In the winter of 1879, while returning home from the GAR annual campfire, he slipped on an icy pavement and sustained a fracture of the hip, which disabled him for all his future life. The sufferings from this accident were constant and intense, and were always borne with uncomplaining fortitude. In early boyhood, he united with a Baptist church, and during that church's earliest struggles in Medina, he was one of its active members and burden carriers. On Sunday morning, September 28th, he received his discharge from life's warfare and quietly went to sleep. He leaves to miss and to mourn him a wife, three sons, and three daughters,